Welcome back. It's a Wednesday hump day, the third day of April, 2024. I'm your host, Mark Call. And since there's so much going on today, and it's arguably so important, let's start with the big earthquakes first and then work our way up. The strongest earthquake in 25 years has just hit Taiwan, killing 9 people, trapping dozens of workers in places like quarries, and injuring nearly 1,000 people. And it's been followed by literally dozens of aftershocks. The original quake, according to Japanese sources, measures 7.7 on the Richter scale, which is huge. And coverage notes that Taiwan is regularly hit by earthquakes, and its population is among the best prepared for them in the world. But authorities said they didn't expect one to be quite this big, so they didn't send out any alerts. On the World War III front and the continuing escalations, we have this from Iran via Hal Turner's radio show. A number of intelligence sources says that one are confirming significant activity at Iranian long-range missile sites in the west and north of the country as retaliation against Israel for bombing their embassy in Damascus, which is considered Iranian sovereign territory, is pending and has even been confirmed at this point with the UN via an official notice letter to the Security Council that there will be a military response. As you probably recall, Israel violated the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations when it bombed a building in Damascus, Syria, on embassy territory, the ambassador's official residence, killing several people, including a high-ranking commander in the Revolutionary Guard. Says Hal Turner, if retaliation does occur, it's likely to be tonight, since it marks the 23rd night of Ramadan, a significant occasion for Shia Muslims, but this may end up being too soon, in which case it'll probably coincide later with some important Muslim funeral, which has proven to be a standard modus operandi for Iranian retaliation. The story does note as well that all of Israel is within the 1,500 to 2,000 kilometer range of Iranian long-range missile sites. And even though the UK is well outside that range, sources there, like The Sun, seem to be warning people to be afraid, be very afraid, and remain vigilant, just in case. Meanwhile, the Jerusalem Post seems to be saying just the opposite. While tensions between Israel and Iran are increased following the assassination of Mohammad Reza Zahedi, senior member of the Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, despite the killing and their fiery rhetoric, Iran dare not attack Israel because they're also afraid of the Biden Fuhrer and the U.S. military they think he leads. You believe that? Meanwhile, Hal Turner's story also adds that the occupation regime in the swamp is now pulling the strings of what's left of the U.S. military to recall veteran retirees, ordering them to report for active duty, citing, Executive Order 13223 from the Bush regime all the way back in 2001, allegedly to address manpower shortages. Oops, I'm pretty sure they didn't use that word. And fill critical vacancies. Of which, as I'm sure you're aware, there are many, whether it's due to people taking the poison poke who didn't have the good sense to get out and then later got really sick, disabled, or dropped dead. Others certainly did leave in droves. Or just people in all walks of life who don't feel like putting their lives on the line for fuzzies, trannies, pedophiles, and perverts. Who obviously don't give a damn about the Constitution that those people originally took an oath to anyway. Still, though, notes Hal Turner, it certainly looks like Big Brother expects a major conflict to be escalating real soon now. Let's turn next to the cultural and real soon civil war front in America. This is an interesting way to kick it off. Bob Iger, CEO of the magic pedophile kingdom, Disney, has fended off a hostile takeover bid at the annual shareholder meeting on Wednesday. Says the Daily Mail, it marks the end of one of the most expensive boardroom battles in history, and a triumph for the Disney veteran and CEO Iger, who's been trying to stave off that hostile takeover for months. And all 12 of Disney's preferred nominees, and you can guess what they are united in wanting to do, folks, were elected to the board by what the winners called a substantial margin. Although I gotta admit, folks, I can't say I find that claim particularly convincing. What does it all mean? Mo wokeness from the no longer quite so magic kingdom. And as your host, folks, I guess I need to make a purely personal observation here. I'd almost rather be force-fed a Bud Light than have to sit through a couple of hours of Disney's latest perversions on parade. Item from Zero Hedge and Moody's Analytics. There are now more dormant office towers in the United States than at any point since 1979, according to that new report from Moody's, which first began tracking office leasing vacancies that year. The rising supply of office space is due to a combination of surging remote and hybrid workforces that allow companies to reduce corporate footprints. Also, and obviously, companies are exiting imploding progressive, how's that for an understatement, cesspool cities, and high-tax blue states, for states that still at least allow a modicum of freedom while downsizing in the process. In the report, office tower vacancies rose to a record just shy of 20% in the fourth quarter of 2023. And while we're on the subject, I'll throw out a related note courtesy of the Epoch Times, also repeated on Zero Hedge. Monday's dramatic bond reduction for President Donald Trump did nothing to dissipate the dark cloud that his quote-unquote civil fraud case has cast over New York and what it's done to business deals. Although investors generally don't like to publicly talk about it, the case is having a chilling effect, said Charles Trzinka, professor of finance at Indiana University at Bloomington. Quote, if you talk to people in this market, they're very, very upset, and these are the people who are neutral or even opposed to Trump, he said. They're just plain angry about it. Because obviously, folks, they recognize the implications. There's not even a pretense of a rule of law there anymore. You may recall that Engeron and company up there are trying to steal $500 million or more of office space and buildings and, of course, the entire business from President Trump, claiming that while no one was actually hurt, there was no crime, and nobody seems upset about it except them, he fraudulently overvalued their assets. And in the process, he's trying to destroy the value of everyone's assets in New York City. Isn't that special? But Trzinka notes that anyone who has any understanding of business and thinks President Trump's activities in this case were irregular or even remotely fraudulent lacks an understanding of typical New York business transactions. And ironically, these cases used to be decided, well, they still are, except when there's a president to hang. They're decided by judges who have actual specific sophisticated, that's a term that the professor used, knowledge of commercial law and business practices, as opposed to idiot hatchet psychos. But Letitia James, masquerading as New York Attorney General, found a, loophole, a novel way to get around New York's anti-fraud law and persecute somebody that they just plain hate. Researchers, notes the piece, have examined other alleged fraud cases in New York over a full seven-decade period and discovered, hey, come on, who's surprised here, that Trump's case stands uniquely alone. And the Trump Organization was the only company that's ever confronted the possibility of being forced out of business despite no victims suffering any major financial harm. As a result of the skullduggery here, the case was channeled to a court that would rarely, if ever, handle anything remotely business-related or these kinds of cases. It's been called a degree of horror by legal scholar Professor Jonathan Turley, who says that the repercussions here are far-reaching. This really, quote, has done great damage to the New York legal system. Businesses are looking at this, he said, with a degree of horror that a judge could come up with a figure so large that you have to sell parts of your business just to get an appeal. And I've said it before, as has Martin Armstrong and others. Now, will the last one out of New York just plain turn off the lights? That is, if Big Brother doesn't do it first. And speaking of corruption run amok, this shouldn't surprise anybody at this point, but it certainly merits more consideration than it's getting from the waste stream. At least Fox News and Jesse Waters are talking about it. Jesse ran a devastating segment last night, says the Gateway Pundit's coverage, on radical judge, sick, Juan Merchan, who silenced President Donald Trump from talking about his family's financial ties to the current junk case he's presiding over against the actually elected president in where else? Slime Central. Well, that's a tough call, but yeah, they're right up there. New York City. Merchan, said Jesse Waters, should be impeached for this lawlessness. It's peak corruption, and it shouldn't be allowed to stand. The judge, sick, presiding over Trump's so-called hush money case in New York, said Jesse Waters, has slapped an even bigger gag order on the former president last night. And I did mention that on this show, folks, but here's the follow-up. Banning him from talking about the sick, psycho judge's family. Why? Because the judge's family was paid off by the Biden-Fuhrer campaign, and they are currently being paid by Adam Schiff to the tune of over $10 million. The guy who, you may recall, not only is a slime bag, but conspired with Michael Cohen, star witness in the case. Trump isn't allowed to say anymore that the judge's daughter is a far-left Democrat consultant whose clients include the Biden campaign, Adam Schiff for brains, and a whole bunch of others that are fundraising off the bogus indictment. They're literally getting rich off Trump trials, and he's presiding over one. Anybody else remember when the rule of law used to actually take a conflict of interest seriously? There's a lot more here, folks, but one thing it has nothing to do with is the rule of law. We do have a bit of good news next. Amidst the tsunami of bad news associated with the invasion, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida is fighting back hard against a program that allows those pulling the strings of the Biden-Fuhrer to fly migrants to fly invaders, let's get it right, to Florida without notifying officials there first, and instead he wants to make Florida, quote, undesirable for illegal immigrants. The so-called CHNV program from the regime allows 30,000 invaders to be released into the country each and every month. And this, folks, is not those that come across the border illegally. This is just those that are flying in on the taxpayer dime. And a new analysis from the Center for Immigration Studies on Monday revealed a vast majority of migrants flown into the U.S. are landing in Miami, where lawyers for CBP, laughably called Customs and Border Protection, SIC, refused earlier this year to disclose in a FOIA request which airports that migrants arriving on the program were coming to after boarding flights in places like Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Communist Venezuela. Not only are states not alerted when the invaders are being flown in, the White Whorehouse makes it difficult for officials in those states to actually monitor and track incoming migrants after they land. And as a result, Florida has filed or joined at least five cases challenging the Biden-Fuhrer's use of parole to release illegal aliens into the country. And they are beginning to win a few of those battles, which, you know it, ultimately means those cases will be assigned to more corrupt judges somewhere else. And by the way, Florida isn't alone. Texas already bears a huge brunt of the invasion, with thousands of illegals entering through the southern border each and every day. But the Lone Star State is also getting the second highest number of Biden-Fuhrer fly-ins. Throughout February, 21,000 plus came through Houston, and nearly 13,000, though, were flown to California through airports in either the cesspool of L.A. or San Francisco. More good news. This shouldn't surprise us either, but the fact that it's being reported is kind of interesting. It also comes from the Daily Mail. There's a new blow for Biden, says the headline, as Trump leads in six out of the seven so-called battleground states, and only 28% of them say that the communist in diapers has the mental fitness to be president, according to the latest poll from the Wall Street Journal. Trump is currently leading the mindless win in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Nevada. And when asked which candidate had better physical and mental fitness to handle the White House, only 28% fell victim to Trump derangement syndrome and said, yeah, the yellow dog that can't handle his diapers. And finally, today's Mark of the Beast update involves Major League Baseball and technology developed by a company called NEC, which is now being utilized, whether fans like it or not, but some are willing to sign up for it. Biometric ticketing. On the opening day of the 2024 Major League Baseball season, the pilot is being undertaken at four designated ballparks, including Minute Maid Park in Houston, where it was revealed that around 6,000 eager dupes favored convenience and the touchless technology for entry to the stadium. Yep, just pony up your right hand or your forehead and come on in. And would you believe, Nationals Park in the Swamp also incorporated the biometric tech through the Major League Baseball go-ahead entry system for their opening day proceedings. And this too, if you haven't seen Climate the Movie, a new documentary produced by Thomas Nelson, directed by Martin Durkin, which has now been released on Vimeo, YouTube, Rumble, and other platforms, and already gathered millions of views and thousands of reviews. Well, says the Epoch Times in their headline, climate alarmists are really upset about the fact that people are seeing the truth, and they have vowed to battle and censor the film for the obvious reason. You're not allowed to know the truth. Maxime Bernier, founder and leader of the People's Party of Canada, posted on X, a service formerly known as Twitter, that people need to, quote, watch this documentary to understand the lies, the pseudoscience, but also the self-interest of government-funded parasites pushing climate alarmism. And the film details how, quote, an eccentric environmental scare grew into a powerful global industry. Others said things like, this is the final nail in the coffin for so-called man-made or human-induced climate change and the scam that surrounds it. An absolute must-watch, which means Big Brother and those who are pushing his agenda don't want you to even know it exists. Links on Vimeo, for example, have already been censored, which means, of course, get it while you can, folks. It's up online. I downloaded it just the other day. With that in mind, folks, let's look back today at the status of the Missouri v. Biden case in the U.S. Supreme Court, even if it's still going to be months till they tell us whether or not free speech is allowed. Originally called Murphy v. Missouri, it's more popularly known now as Missouri v. Biden. And in a tweet after it came out, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky called the case the most consequential free speech case in U.S. history. Quote, This isn't just about social media companies. It's a critical examination of government overreach. The Biden regime, he spelled it wrong, and FBI efforts to influence big tech into silencing dissent tramples on the First Amendment. Our focus, he continued, must be on preventing government censorship, not compelling private entities to act as censors. This case, he said, could redefine our free speech, unquote, or obviously, folks, the lack thereof. In the Gateway Pundit's coverage, and they're one of the plaintiffs in the case, they shared excerpts from oral arguments made by U.S. Supreme Court Justice, sick and double sick in her case, Ketanji Brown Jackson, the alleged female who doesn't know what a woman is, but still gets to wear a black robe and tell everybody else what they can and cannot say, whose comments about the First Amendment, they note, and this is true, folks, literally rocked socialist media. Quote, and make sure you're sitting down for this one. I realize as I read through this, I'm probably going to have to take a break now and again. Quote, my biggest concern is that your view, she said, addressing the plaintiff's lawyer, has the First Amendment hamstringing the government. Well, gee, you idiot! That's the whole point of the First Amendment. Indeed, the entirety of the Bill of Rights. It's a prohibition specifying what Big Brother cannot do. And some of these idiots completely missed the whole point. They shouldn't even be there, but that's another issue. My concern, she said, is that your view, yeah, by the way, the view of the founders who wrote, Congress shall make no law, has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways at the most important time, unquote. And what's the most important time? Yeah, when we want to kill you with lethal injections and lie to you about what it is that may end up killing you otherwise. The most important time. That's when it's most important people should be allowed to speak and hear information that is true, not government approved and Ministry of Truth regulated. But back to the quote here. I mean, what would you have the government do? I'd have them shut the hell up and keep the hell out of business that they are prohibited from having anything to say about anyway. But hey, that's just those of us that can read a document. I don't think she's ever even opened the page to. This she asked Louisiana Solicitor General Benjamin Aguinaldo. But if you thought that was stupid, just wait. She's on a roll. I've heard you say a couple of times, this blithering moron continued, that the government can post its own speech. But in the hypothetical, you know, kids, this is not safe. Don't do what is not going to get it done. In other words, if we want to cut off your genitalia, having your parents say, don't do it, is not going to get it done. They might even post things that we don't want you, little kiddies, or you, American citizens, to be allowed to read. That is exactly, folks, what she's talking about here. We'll come back to that in a minute. But for now, let's just continue with this idiotic quote. So, I guess some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country. Their poor little brains can't handle things that we don't want them to know, don't you know? And you, she told the attorney for the plaintiffs, seem to be suggesting that that duty, no, it's a prohibited act, folks, cannot manifest itself in the government, encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information. And you're damn right, you blithering idiot. That's exactly what the First Amendment says. You don't have any lawful authority whatsoever to decide what can and cannot be spoken and who gets to coerce others to censor information you don't want them to have for you. And as the Gateway Pundit put it, commenting on this idiocy, quote, that's the most horrifying thing I've ever heard from a Supreme Court justice. And that, folks, is closer to the truth than anything out of Ketanji Brown Jackson's lips. But on this score, everybody can see it. Ketanji Brown Jackson is concerned that this pesky First Amendment thing is making it harder for Big Brother to censor speech. To use Orwell's terminology, their Ministry of Truth just can't have pesky things like this getting in the way of what they need to accomplish. How else do you think we're going to be able to give you the Zyklon B injections, force you to get on the train, or even prevent you from having life-saving information that we tried so hard to prevent you before and managed to kill a few million people in the process about things like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin? This is satanic evil, folks. Let's not kid ourselves. And the fact that there are openly tyrannical traitors sitting on this court wearing black robes having this discussion in plain sight rather than simply saying, you've got to be kidding me, who the hell do you think you are trying to pull this kind of crap, FBI and CDC and Biden Fuhrer Ministry of Truth? If we had a rule of law, they'd have actually been convicted already under the U.S. Criminal Code, Title 18, Section 242, that has to do with deprivation of once constitutionally protected rights under color of law. Ironically, folks, I looked it up this morning. The FBI's own site says that this statute makes it a crime for them or any other, quote, person acting under color of law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom to willfully deprive, and don't think for a second they didn't know damn well what they were doing, or cause to be deprived, any person, the rights, privileges, or immunities secured or protected by, yeah, the Constitution for these United States. And given that they cost a whole lot of deaths, for example, by withholding information about ivermectin so they could aid and abet the big lie and make sure they called it an emergency with no other treatment options available, yeah, sure, and mandating that a lot of people take a Zyklon B injection without informed consent, they are liable, all of those involved, for jail time up to and including life, oh yeah, and the death penalty for a whole lot of murders. Why is the Supreme Court saying anything different? In fairness, though, not all of the black robe priests of another god were complete idiots. In one of the most blistering exchanges in the oral arguments on Tuesday, says the Gateway Pundit, U.S. Justice, and he at least deserves the title, Samuel Alito appeared to be admonishing Big Brother for treating socialist media platforms like their subordinates. In his comments, Justice Alito referenced, quote, the exchange between the White House and other federal officials, and to Facebook in particular, but also some of the other platforms, and he continued, and I see that the White House and other federal officials are repeatedly saying that Facebook, SIC, and the federal government should be partners. Isn't that fascism in action, folks? The very definition? Back to Alito. I.e., we're on the same team. Officials are demanding answers. I want an answer, he said. I want it right away. And when they're unhappy, they curse them out. There are regular meetings there, and the constant pestering of Facebook and some of the other platforms, and they want to have regular meetings, and they suggest rules that should be applied, and tell us everything that you do so we can help you, and we can look it over. And I thought, wow, I cannot imagine federal officials taking that approach to the print media or representatives over there. If you did that to them, what do you think the reaction would be? Well, if it's the New York Times or WAPO folks, they'll say, thank you, sir, may I have another, and go ahead and do it again. And lie about it to the public besides. Anyway, back to Alito. I thought he said, you know, the only reason why this is taking place is because the federal government has got Section 230 and antitrust in its pocket. And, to mix my metaphors, it's got these big clubs available to it. And so it's treating these platforms like they're subordinates. Would you do that, he said, to the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or the Associated Press or any other big newspaper or wire service? Unquote. And, yeah, folks, sadly, asked and answered. Anyway, he asked this to U.S. Principal Deputy Solicitor General Brian Fletcher, Menachemo, who was defending the anti-First Amendment censorship practices of Big Brother and Big Tech and using the so-called once-in-a-lifetime plandemic as the excuse for destroying and killing people in the interest of, you know, the greater good and all the other crap that Big Brother uses to say you slaves don't have any rights. For some more detail next on the specifics of the so-called arguments, we'll go to the Epoch Times and authors like first Matthew Vadim and then Zachary Stiber. Wrote Vadim, Supreme Court justices, SIC, seem skeptical of state arguments, that would be the state of Louisiana and Missouri, on March 18th, that the FedGov was wrong to communicate with socialist media platforms about what they laughably called public health issues during the recent pandemic. At the same time, during oral argument in Murphy v. Missouri, a.k.a. folks, Missouri v. Biden, the states argued that the FedGov strong-armed socialist media companies into censoring disfavored views on important public issues, like side effects related to the COVID-19 not vaccine. I'm going to correct a couple of little errors in here as we go through it. And the pandemic lockdowns. Applying this kind of pressure, said the states, violates the First Amendment. And I have to add, you're damn right it does. Next, he said Dr. Vivek Murthy, SIC, is, sadly, U.S. Surgeon General. The state of Missouri and other parties sued the FedGov for alleged censorship by pressuring socialist media companies to suppress certain disfavored content that would have hurt their public-private partners, like Pfizer, Moderna, and Big Brother CDC, not to mention globalist plans for genocide on a massive scale. Said Vadim, conservatives and others have complained that socialist media censors information about transgender issues, COVID-19, and the rigged 2020 election. They were particularly concerned about coverage of Hunter Biden's laptop, well, non-coverage is a better way to put it, that contained information they say almost certainly, and everybody knows it, would have harmed the rigged election that installed the senile guy, the Biden-Fuhrer, in the White House, had it been allowed to actually get out. Or as the Epoch Times puts it, had it been allowed to actually circulate freely. Does anybody actually doubt that that's true at this point? It's just a bit too late, isn't it? Damage done, regime in place, criminal government installed, and now we're suppressing any truth about what actually was done, and if we get our way with the First Amendment, we'll make sure it never comes out.